Hello and welcome to The Urbanist, Monocle's programme all about the built environment. I'm your host, Carlotta Ribello. Coming up...
This rock that we put in dissolves and combines with the CO2 to form another kind of rock. Now that final product happens to be very interesting when applied into construction materials.
We explore the impact that more sustainable building materials can have on the construction industry. From a company with a solid plan to turn CO2 into cement, to an advocate for mass timber who sees the value of using the things we take from the environment in what we build. And a project looking to turn destruction into creation by recycling demolition waste back into construction materials. Plus, with the cement industry being one of the main producers of greenhouse gases when it comes to construction, we hear from a leader in the field. All that and more over the next 30 minutes right here on The Urbanist with me, Carlotta Ribello. Concrete is, in every sense, the foundation on which we have built all of modern mankind, even if most of it we cannot even see. Every man-made structure, like an iceberg, disappears many meters below our view on giant concrete foundations, and every road, sewer, car park, or even lamppost relies on it. However, the concrete industry releases 2.8 billion tons of CO2 every year. With many major nations now on huge housing drives, they face an immovable grey problem. How can they build millions more houses while still meeting promised targets to remain carbon neutral? One company claims it can now successfully transform every one ton of CO2 into 3 tons of usable building material, not only removing problem CO2, but reducing the need to create more. To tell us more, Andy Jones sent us this report.
So this is the sound of turning the world's CO2 problem into dust.
My name is Andrea Sari. I am a co-founder and co-CEO here at Pebble.
Pebble is a company who can take polluting CO2 directly out of the Earth's atmosphere and turn it into cement and concrete. Normally, the process of turning CO2 back into stone-like material would take Mother Nature thousands of years, but Pebble's reactor can do it inside 1 hour. I went to Rotterdam to see how Pebble's reactor works.
So what we're looking at here is first... We're looking at a bag of sand. This looks very boring. It's grey, fine particles that you would see out there somewhere on a construction site or in nature. This grey sand is very abundant. You find it on every single continent. This is what we put into our process together with the CO2 and some water. And this rock that we put in dissolves and combines with the CO2 to form another kind of rock. Now, that final product happens to be very interesting when applied into construction materials. And what we do to it after we take it out of the reactor is we remove the water, we dry the product, and what you get is a jar full of light grey powder that looks like cement.
Fantastic. And that can immediately be used in a building yard anywhere in the world.
Exactly. You can blend this together with water and rocks and regular cement to make concrete.
And that still has the same structural integrity, the same uses, the same safety. You could build a multi-story car park out of that if you had enough of it.
We can get to those same levels of strength with this product when used in combination with the other parts that go into concrete, like sand and gravel.
So we're taking problematic CO2, of which the building industry produces billions of tons of every year, locking it into an inert powder, which through a reaction in your reactor then becomes usable, workable, cement-like product.
Just to be very clear, what happens is we take CO2, it can come from the building industry, it can come from anywhere else, we combine it with normal rocks, and out comes a powder which stores the CO2, but reacts cementitiously to form concrete.
Concrete is the second most used resource on Earth behind water, yet its production is so environmentally damaging that... If concrete was a country, its CO2 output would only be behind that of China and the US. In this sense, Pebble's process is doubly useful for the environment. The main issue is providing broad enough and fast enough change at a cost-effective price. Pebble believe they can do all of this to create real change in the building industry as early as tomorrow.
Hi, my name is Marta Hrugin. I am co-founder and co-CEO of Pebble. We started out 2 years ago. We were at gram scale. Right now, we're producing tons of product. Towards the end of this year, we will scale by a factor of 10. And then every year, you can expect us to scale by roughly a factor of 10. In a couple of years' time, we will be able to build whole neighborhoods out of it. That's how quickly we will scale, because the planet needs us to. We've gone from CO2 being a problem into CO2 becoming one of the biggest carbon sinks out there. So when we talk to the industry, we position it as, well, what if your ambitious construction project could be the most ambitious carbon sink in the world? And that gets people going.
But the building industry wasn't always so excited about Pebble. Whilst the company has made giant leaps since officially launching in 2021, co-founder and scientist Paul Knops spent decades trying to get the idea off the ground.
Paul started researching into this about 18 years ago. He was inspired by an academic paper that he read that came from the US that was published about 30 years ago, mm-hmm. more than 30 years ago, and realized that, hey, we can turn CO2 back into rock. When we came into contact with Paul, he was coming towards an end of a 3-year research project with an unnamed cement company that was making it difficult to publish the results.
Why was that? Because it would trouble the industry or something?
It's because the results were very promising. And of course, if you come out with promising results that can cannibalize your main cash cow product, that poses an issue.
Now, with net zero meaning stringent planning rules, construction companies are very keen to listen, particularly as the technology involved in Pebble's process requires very little energy, uses immediately available materials, and technology that is already widely used. Pebble is now supplying the foundations for future cities.
We're going to have a plant with a capacity of between 1 and 10,000 tons of product a year, operational within 6 to 9 months from now. And we're expecting to ship the first batches of our product to make a precast concrete wall within the next couple of weeks. And the precast concrete wall is essentially a large Lego block. You build houses, you can build bridges, you can, you know, you have pillars and beams of concrete that have been manufactured at a precast concrete manufacturing site. There's two ways of making concrete. You can cast concrete on site, it comes in a truck and you pour it, or you can bring in already precast, pre-hardened, manufactured elements made out of concrete.
And Pebble's little grey matter could also feature in some smaller but equally useful day-to-day items.
Anything from decorative concrete to structural concrete to precast mortar and similar. Fillers for paper, for polymers. Fillers are in just about anything that you have in your house. And instead of taking limestone, you could be using recycled CO2.
You talked about decorative concrete. We've got a decorative concrete rosette here. And other sort of decorative things that might not be out of place in a garden centre.
That's right, yes. You could be going to your local garden centre and looking at, you know, we're in the springtime right now. You could be looking at stuff to put into your garden. And instead of seeing some random concrete piece, you could be seeing restored carbon.
And anyone with an eye on investment would see that the reactor itself and its ability to turn pollution into product could be worth more than its weight in gold, or at least its weight in carbon capture. For instance, the reactor could be installed at something like an urban paper mill to turn the CO2 the mill produces back into filler for the paper itself. From Pebble's new and slightly noisy factory in Rotterdam, Andreas explains more.
Your production process is spewing out 500,000 tons of CO2 up every single year. You don't know what to do with it. And you're also not an expert in carbon capture. So we come to you, we develop the full project, we install carbon capture equipment, we install CO2 mineralization equipment, and suddenly your CO2 turns into a huge contribution of carbon negative materials for your local economy. Now, many years from now, we might be also selling licenses to the technology itself, but at least for the first 3 to 5 plants, we're going to be operating them ourselves, because we need to learn everything that we can about all the practical things that always come up when you're scaling up a new process.
So a paper company, theoretically in future, could buy your technology, and not only would they then become more CO2 neutral, they're getting rid of their problem CO2, they can then turn that into an inert powder that is then made into further paper.
Correct. You could use that powder in the paper. The powder itself is not exactly inert, but it is suitable for the paper production as well.
As well as turning pollution into paper, the CO2 could also be turned into future building materials that could be used to extend and repair the factory itself, or even just building materials that could be sold on the open market. Now that's what you call a rock-hard commitment to circular carbon capture.
And my thanks to Andy Jones for that report. Next, we look at a project coming out of Germany, which proposes recycling waste, both from building demolitions and agricultural processes, to use in new constructions. Earlier, I was joined by Wenju Ma, a research associate in the Remap Built project, to discuss the idea and the logistics behind what is proposed. I began by asking Wenju about the scale of the problem.
According to the report, around 1.5 billion tons of the waste were generated in 2020 in China, and in Germany, more than 200 million tons. And the recycling rate in 2020 was about 5% for China and 90% for Germany. So this project aims to use this kind of construction and demolition waste along with plant-based production residues to build up sustainable and high-performance construction elements.
Well, let's talk precisely about that. Tell me a bit more about then the solution that the Remap Built project is working on.
So more specifically, we proposed two structures. One is the insulated concrete wall system. For the production of the concrete, we used old concrete from the demolition waste as a kind of recycled aggregates to replace natural stones. And we also used rice husk ash, which is obtained from the burning of rice husk, to partially replace cement, because as we know, the carbon dioxide emission from cement production is very high. And for the insulation materials, we also tried various plant-based production residues like rice husk, rice straw, wheat straw, and wood fiber. They have good thermal insulation performance. And another structure we developed is an innovative roof system, which is an adhesively bonded wood concrete composite structure. Again, we used recycled aggregates and rice husk ash to fabricate concrete. Apart from this, we used flex fabric instead of steel rebar to reinforce the concrete part, which makes the structure lightweight and sustainable.
And all those materials, because this solution, you know, it's incorporating natural waste as well. You are describing some of the natural materials there, but I'm also curious, where did they come from? Because that also plays a huge part in the sustainability aspect of this.
Yeah, for example, the rice husk ash, which is just the waste from the cultivation of the rice. And in China, it's very rich of rice cultivation. So we propose this idea, and even for the old concrete or the old clay bricks, we can recycle from the demolition waste in both Germany and China.
I'm curious about the cost difference for the developer. Do you think this would be a hard sell to get projects to move away from conventional materials and to come to you for this recycled alternative? If I was a developer and I was trying to be more sustainable with my construction, would this make a bigger impact in my bank account?
Actually, to be honest, these materials are all from the waste, from the construction waste or agricultural waste. So we can imagine that the cost is mainly from the transportation or pre-treatment. Actually, we are also planning to analyze the cost efficiency as well as a life cycle assessment in the future at our second phase for this project.
And is that then the next goal, to try to scale this up so that you get more partners on board and that you can start seeing this as an alternative that people know about? And how do you go about doing that? I'm curious.
Actually, we already attended many workshops, exhibitions, like in next week, we are going to attend a Hannover Messe just in Germany. Until now, we already got many interviews, and people also can find some articles from different journals. And we also published many research papers. So that's also one of the tasks of this project, to demonstrate our project.
Of course. And I guess I have one final question. When I was reading about the project, one of the things that came up was this idea of Remat Bell being able to affect people directly and change their lives. And one of the examples that was given was also how this could be helpful in the rebuilding efforts for places like Ukraine, for example. Are you able to tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, that's true. That's actually one of the ideas come from our coordinator, Professor Li Boyan. And he's believing that the research outcome from this project can be used for the reconstruction of Ukraine, since a huge amount of rubble were generated by the war. And the country is also rich in agricultural resources like wheat, like rice. He's also currently working on finding some local research and industrial partners, and we could make the post-war construction quickly, cost-effectively, and sustainably.
Wen Juma from the Remat Build project there, speaking to me a bit earlier. Now, as we've heard so far, we know that the cement industry is one of the main producers of greenhouse gases in our cities. It's reported that after water, concrete is the most widely used substance on Earth. So I wanted to check in with one of the leaders in this field to hear how they are working to help decarbonize the sector and become part of the solution, not of the problem. Earlier, I was joined by Edelio Bermejo, who's the head of global research, development and innovation at the Holcim Group, the cement and building materials global company. I started by asking Edelio just how sustainable the materials currently used in construction actually are.
Globally, I would say they are not enough. With 2.5 billion inhabitants in addition by 2050. With the ongoing urbanization, we're building one equivalent of New York every month. And knowing that still 60% of the infrastructure to be built by 2050, with all these needs, the demand for building materials will be huge. The demand for the construction in cities will be giant. But there's no other way to decarbonize our industry. We absolutely need to decarbonize and to promote the circular economy revolution. Otherwise, we will just be hitting a wall which is not needed today. So we need to decarbonize our industry and we need to promote circular economy.
Well, let's look at that mission and challenge to decarbonize the industry. How is Holcim working to deliver some of these low carbon solutions?
We're producing a range of low carbon products, but we're on our way to develop a brand and to make it known by everyone in the world. The objective is obviously to develop products which are low carbon. Low carbon means at least a 30% of reduction of carbon embodied in our products with no compromise on quality. We need to deliver 100% of performance. And we branded these products 2-3 years ago now in order to create awareness among the decision makers. Engineers, architects, developers, owners, all must be convinced that low carbon solutions exist and they have to request these solutions.
Well, and it all comes back to innovation. And I know that one of the things Holcim has been working on is 3D printing to build better with less. Tell me about that and how does it work?
We started that journey 4 or 5 years ago with the conviction that 3D printing can make a revolution. To what extent, we still don't know, but we are convinced that the product, the 3D concrete printing, has some potential in the future. We built the Striatus and the Phoenix, which are two lighthouses, the two first of its kind 3D concrete printed bridges that we designed with Zaha Hadid Architects and the ETH research group from Philip Block. And all this in collaboration with Incremental 3D, a company which is printing our own print and making this 3D concrete bridge. That's for us a new language, showing that concrete can be digital, environmentally advanced, and very important, circular by design. Because the structure we build with this 3D concrete printed bridge is not only the bridge is standing together, the pieces are standing together solidly through compression. There's no reinforcement, no glue, no binders. And we did apply the computational design in order to minimize the material use and to maximize the strength. So all the blocks are recyclable. This is a lighthouse for us, showing that everything is possible with 3D printing. And then obviously, We need to make it scalable. We need to make it big enough and creating an impact right now. That's why we're today very much promoting 3D printing for housing.
Well, you mentioned there and earlier in our conversation, a circular construction. What does that look like? And are you having challenges in getting other partners involved in adapting a mode of operating that involves circular construction?
Not that much, I would say. On the circular construction, this is really accelerating these days. People are understanding that circularity is the business opportunity of our time. So, you know, the world economy has grown a lot. The trajectory today that we're setting is to consume 2-3 planets by 2040. And obviously, in order to make this work for people and the planet, we need to shift from a linear take-make waste economy to a circular reduce, reuse, recycle one. So obviously, construction has a key role to play to lead this shift. And we are at Holcim leading this shift to circular construction with a focus on three areas. The first one is recycling materials across all our products. The second one is to build more with less. And then here we empower the smart design and the brains of our architects. And third is repairing and renovating buildings to make them last longer with smart green retrofitting. So circular construction is the business opportunity for construction industry.
Now, there is, of course, one thing I have to ask you, because we know that the cement industry is one of the main producers of greenhouse gases when it comes to construction. And it's been amazing to hear all of the things that Holcim is doing to help decarbonize the sector. So tell me more about those challenges and how Holcim is going about decarbonizing the construction industry.
Holcim is already decarbonizing the sector by using decarbonated materials as much as they're available. By using technologies that reduces the clinker content, which is the one which is creating, emitting the CO2. And obviously, adding carbon capture technology where it's needed. By 2030, Holcim will be capturing 5 million tons of CO2, which is representing 8 million tons of cement carbon neutral. And we need to accelerate this.
Well, we know that our cities are having to build quickly and en masse to face up to the rising housing crisis that's being seen worldwide and the fast-growing population that's also moving from rural areas into urban areas. So tell me a bit more about Holcim's outlook for the future of the built environment and some of the ways that you've been working on this issue.
We're working on solutions like modular construction, predictive performance to save time, to increase productivity, automation on the job site, digital ordering, fast tracking in deliveries, all these are solutions to build quicker, to increase productivity in the construction industry, productivity which has not increased that much in the last decades compared to other energy, automotive, or pharmaceutical industry. So we need to accelerate on this. But something which is absolutely key is the environmental and circular transparency. That will be key in everything we'll do in the future. This is our license to operate and to live on this planet.
Edelio Bermejo there from Holcim. Thank you for joining us. And finally today, we'll look into mass timber construction, an industry whose growth we have followed through the years here on The Urbanist. Earlier, Monocle's Andrew Tuck was joined by Santwana Malakar, a master's student in advanced ecological buildings and biocities at the Institute for Advanced Architecture of Catalonia, whose thesis has been looking into sustainable urban development through mass timber, specifically in the context of Kathmandu, a swiftly growing urban metropolis where timber use is so far an untapped resource for the city. Andrew began by asking Santwana to set the scene in terms of the construction industry and urban growth in the Nepalese capital.
So Kathmandu is a city which is actually known for its beautiful traditional timber craftsmanship. So we have, if you see the urban fabric even now, the hundreds of years old buildings which were built with timber structure and load-bearing brick hybrid structures are still a very active part of the urban fabric and also of the daily lives there. But what has happened right now is because of the globalization and urbanization, it's kind of losing that unique cultural identity, even the architectural identity that existed there. And what has happened is right now kind of like a concrete jungle growth where it's kind of like an unmanaged sprawl. which is also kind of like a common global problem that is happening in many of the global cities. We know that the urban population is constantly growing, and the building sector to cater to that demand is also growing proportionally with it. So it's kind of like a similar scenario that is also happening in Kathmandu.
We know that the construction industry is a big generator of CO2, is struggling in many sectors to be sustainable. How damaging is this industry, well, in general, but especially when it comes to Kathmandu?
I don't have specific data for Kathmandu, but I think we can talk from the global perspective also that the building sector globally is responsible for 42% of the global carbon emission. So that includes like everything from raw material extraction to material handling and transport, also carbon intensive processing and manufacturing processes of the prevalent building materials, and also all the way to the end of the life of these materials. So Kathmandu being the part of this global system of the same materials and same type of urban development, it's very much part of the global issues that everyone is tackling.
Just tell me, so we know cross-laminate timber buildings are appearing in lots of cities around the world, perhaps started first up in the Nordics, but most cities these days seem to be very confident about building a timber tower or buildings made from this special way of using slices of timber which are held together by adhesive, but which can be robust in any weather. Now, you're thinking that there could be a local homegrown version of this in Nepal. How would it happen? How would you make this product in Nepal?
Well, that was the part of the research that I did for my master's program here in Barcelona. So, like, that's the first question that we have to ask ourselves, that do we have enough wood before even talking about wood as the alternative material to provide to all of these growing demands? So the first thing that I researched about was the forest cover of the country itself, whether we have enough wood or not. So through that research, I've got good numbers for it that right now, 45% of the land cover is forest in Nepal, which is a very promising number that we have enough resources there. Another thing that I focused on also was that as the global construction sector is kind of moving towards this new timber era, it's also very important to talk about sustainable sourcing of these materials. So if we do not take forward the practices of sustainable forest management to provide to these demands, then we're creating a bigger problem of deforestation. So what is really important right now is very localized research of the local forests that is available, and also the local species that is found there, and what are the unique properties of those species and which are the ones that we can take forwards.
You're hoping this can also be circular as well, that some existing wood that's, you know, maybe in buildings are being taken down can be used in this process as well.
Yes. In Kathmandu, the main problem I had to tackle with was the general lack of value chain for mass timber, because the prevalent market is very much dependent on highly carbon intensive materials. So the problem with implementing mass timber in Kathmandu was mostly because of the lack of market there. So what I proposed was also this development of value chain for the mass timber and focusing specifically on sustainable forest management, sustainable sourcing of these materials, local productions and development of mid-scale factories and the cities that grow together.
And just tell me, Santuana, you know, as part of this master's project, you didn't just think about the problem. You began to come up with a solution as well, thinking about how you could use the material and looking at a workers' housing community. Explain how this was going to be using CLT.
Well, the focus was to use multi-species CLT. I want to be clear on that step, because as we're moving towards timber as the alternate material, I did not want to promote a single species and kind of create this process of mass production of that species as the ideal solution. But what I wanted was to really understand what the forest is giving us and then utilize those diverse species. Like, I used cedar and pine, two of those species, for my design. And we know that cedar, through research, I also found out that cedar is kind of like the more water resistant and more pest resistant wood than pine. So just by utilizing a cedar on the external layer and using pine as the core of the CLT, I was trying to see how to change the way of thinking and how designers assign materials itself. When you're talking about wood, it's not just wood. You have the possibility of researching on different species and their unique properties and somehow assigning them where it's perfect. So that was the one in the prototype panel level, and that became part of a bigger residential unit, which was then part of a pilot neighborhood project that would be developed to support the pilot mass timber factory.
Santwana Malakar there in conversation with Andrew Tuck. And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. You can get new editions of the show every week. Just follow us through your favorite podcast platform. You can also subscribe to Monocle Magazine for regular reports on all things design, architecture, and urbanism. Just visit monocle.com. The Urbanist is produced by me, Carlotta Ribello, and by David Stevens, who also edits the show. Andrew Tuck will be back next week. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, city lovers.